Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Write or Die. I have a special treat for you guys today. Jennifer Dugan is on the show. She's the author of the upcoming Hot Dog Girl, which is coming summer 2019. I'm really, really excited to have her on the show. I'm so excited about her book. How are you, Jennifer?
Oh, I'm great. I'm very excited to be here.
Okay, so you've had quite a journey to get to the point that you are right now. I know a little bit about it, but if you want to share with the listeners, with the Write or Die listeners, how you got to this point and just take us on the journey of publishing with you, that would be really great.
Yeah, so it's definitely been a long journey. I've always wanted to be a writer, but I didn't get super serious about it until about 2009. So that was when I kind of decided I was really going to just go all in and really just write the book. So my first book was sort of a disaster of what not to write.
Oh, gosh.
It was it was a new adult novel, which even back then wasn't like a hot seller.
Yeah.
It was 120,000 words, which is slightly long. It took place almost entirely in an apartment with a character who was mostly drunk.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I did query this quite widely. I thought it was pure gold. I comped Nick Hornby and James Joyce, because nothing says modern day, like, know your market than comping James Joyce. So this will probably come as a shock, but I got no requests.
Do you remember how many agents you queried with this book?
I don't know. Probably pretty much every agent that like was Googleable. I didn't know anything about like researching. I mean, I probably sent it to people who rep like sci-fi or memoirs. Like, I just sent it. If you were an agent and you had an email, you probably got it, and I'm very sorry.
Oh man. So okay. So what happened after that?
So that clearly didn't work.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to like step back. And I started doing a little bit of research, following some like writing blogs. And I think that was about when I found Absolute Write and Predators and Editors. I don't know if is that still even around?
I think it might be. I'm not sure. I'll check. And if it is around still, I will link it below.
So stuff like that, where I just started to kind of learn more about the industry, learn more about the norms, book length, what they should be, things like that. I wrote three more books during that time. So I was writing about one a year. And they didn't really go anywhere, but each one I kind of decided, as I was starting to get feedback from other agents, I would get some partial requests and I got some personalized feedback, and I kind of just shifted where anything after that disastrous first book, any response at all kind of felt like a win.
Right.
So I said, I'm just going to take what they're giving me and use this to grow, you know, to grow and do better, because I was really, you know, this was my dream and what I really wanted. And I felt like if an agent was taking the time to then I wanted to try to listen and apply that maybe in this book, maybe in the next book, and just look at it as kind of like as a growing experience.
Right.
I was definitely doing like what I felt was my best work. I wouldn't recommend just querying a mess and expecting people to help you. That's not, you know, that's more of the role of a crit partner. So I would put out the best work that I possibly could. I just wasn't there yet.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Where did you find your critique partners?
So, well, that was really the turning point. I actually didn't use them until the book right before Hot Dog Girl.
Okay.
I had started hearing about them, and that's when I really started to open up my mind and And because at first I thought like I knew best and the story was my baby and I didn't need other voices and it was going to just be me. And this agent was going to think it was gold and then they were just going to go sell it as is. Like I had this really like completely wrong view of how everything works.
That's not how any of this works. Yes.
Right. But when I did start, I started finding them because I learned about different contests like PitMad, like a big one that I was doing. And I started, like, I was trying to get into Pitch Wars and things like that. And that there's such a sense of community that surrounds them. So that's when I started to find, you know, people who wrote similar to me and things, you know, and people that I could work with and we could share our work and do it that way. I actually really think, and it's something I've talked to my editor about, was that I feel like when I started to incorporate crit partners was really when I went to the next level with my writing.
Yeah.
I think they really pushed me hard to grow and
they're so important. You know, they're so important.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's I think pretty much every single person that I've had on the podcast so far has found their critique partners like through contests and through pitch competitions and like all those kinds of things. So that's really cool. Shows how important those events are, not just for getting an agent, but for the connections that you can make with other people.
Yeah, for sure, especially with my earlier work, which was not really up to par. That was really, you know, what I got out of it. I wasn't, you know, I didn't leave the early contest with an agent, but I did leave with people that I think definitely helped get me to that point. So that was still a win in the end.
Okay, so you have some critique partners now. You know, the Nick Hornby and James Joyce book is not doing anything for you.
No, that one's gone. I had three more books that were kind of trial and error. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, everybody has to write like the one like paranormal romance. So okay. I did that.
Was it about? Can you tell me
I don't even, remember. It was like another like just love sick. I think it was like a ghost and like a human girl. And I forget what there was this whole like other realm that they like could go to be together. And it was just very, bad. Nothing.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's nothing that could like ever be salvaged. Like it was definitely like a learning experience. I think I queried that to like five agents and then was just like, no, this is wrong. at that point, so I started to get some crit partners. I started to get more feedback from partial requests. I still never had made it to a full request.
Okay.
But I started to get some personalized feedback and I started to have, you know, and I'm doing all this research and like I have all these voices in my head and I'm trying to write, you know, I'm trying to write to what the market looks like. I'm trying to, you know, like this is out, so I'm not going to write this. This is like, you know, so I'm just trying to, I just had so many voices in my head that I just kind of completely lost sight of what I was doing. And then that was the point really where I was just kind of like, yeah, I was getting a lot of feedback that it was like close, but not quite. And there's something missing. And I started to realize that I was really like it was my voice that was really missing from it. Because one of the things which I find really interesting, I hear a lot from other writers, especially other queer writers, is that they always wrote all of these queer characters and it helped them to kind of figure out and kind of like embrace that side of their identity. Or maybe they thought they were straight, but they were always, you know, writing about queer characters and things like that. And it was like eye-opening. So I've heard that so many times. And for me, it was really the opposite. Whereas I've known my whole life, like there was never there was never any question that I was bi or like, I mean, my earliest memories, it's always just been a thing.
Yeah.
But for me, writing about that felt really vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So I didn't put that into my work. I really shied away from it. I just wrote completely, like, I write a lot of romance. I love, like, I'm obsessed with love. I'm, like, constantly, like, I walk through this world and it's, like, somebody, like, turns their head and I'm, like, I love you now.
Oh, my God.
Like, it's just my whole, like, I just, like, constant crushes and everything. It's, like, hilarious.
That's me. I say, oh, my God, because that's also me. I can see somebody, like, on a bus from afar and I'm, like, is it meant to be?
Yeah, like it's just constant. Yeah, it's like I hear a song and I'm like, I'm gonna marry this song now. Like everything, it's just is just this like heightened. I just love. So I'm writing all of these romances and I'm writing all of these like heterosexual romances because it felt safe. Like there was this, you can reject that, but it's not really me, so I don't. It doesn't feel as personal.
Okay.
So I kind of just, like, I kept up this wall, basically, like, here's my art and here's me and there's this dividing line. So it was around that time, which at that point I was like 4 novels in, where I'm like, okay, it's not clicking. And then I was like, maybe it's this wall that I've put up that's making him seem inauthentic or what have you.
Yeah.
So I kind of dipped my toes in and I started writing. I wrote a queer romance with 2 bi boys because I felt I still wasn't completely all in. Like I felt writing about the boys still gave me that little bit of a bubble.
Right.
That I just wasn't quite ready to come completely out of. So I borrowed heavily from, you know, everything that I had gone through. Another thing, you know, a big part of that book was the whole, like, is it, you know, am I queer enough and or am I too queer, which is something, especially for me, that I deal with a lot in real life, being bisexual and in a relationship with a man. So mm-hmm. It's very, like, heteronormative seeming.
Yeah.
There's a lot of policing that goes on with that. And so it's a very, you know, I was also very nervous about coming out and saying, well, you know, I'm a queer writer and this has been my experience. And then kind of getting rejected from the queer community, which happens a lot to bisexuals in general, but especially when they are in a heteronormative appearing. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So I wrote that book. I wrote my first like queer book, and that was my almost book, which got a lot of interest. But it wasn't quite, I didn't end up getting an offer out of it. I got some comments that like were really good. A lot of it was, it took place in the first few weeks of college. So that made it a tougher sell. Mm-hmm.
Because it's, like, straddling that, like, new adult line again, sort of.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, it was clearly young adult. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the parents are super involved and they don't, you know, it's all. But, yeah, but that was the thing because college isn't typical young adult. That was a mark against it. And then I had some agents that were interested that just really didn't, they didn't really get it. And they were, like, I got a lot of comments, like, up the heat level, which I'm like, these are teen boys. Like, I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, that's not the point of what I'm trying to do. And, you know, that wasn't, I was like, okay, so this is my almost book. And at that point, I was just like, screw it. I'm going to write the book for me. I'm going to write the book that I wish I had as a teenager. I'm just going to write about a bi girl that's a mess who's just trying to, like, live her best life in whatever that looks like for her. So I just hammered it out, and I was like, I'm going to put it out there. And I really thought, you know, when I was getting it polished and ready to query, I really was like, this could be it. Like, if this book doesn't work, like, I don't know. This book was more personal. I didn't know if I would come back from that and keep writing, or if, like, it definitely was a lot more of a vulnerable place than I'd ever been sending it out.
Yeah, you spent a lot of books avoiding doing exactly what you were doing.
Right. I worked really hard to not write this book. And so now it was like kind of my moment of truth, you know, and I'm like, okay, I've really put myself all out here. Like, I can't put my heart anymore on a plate. So I really hope that that something comes of this. It's absolutely just like a love letter to Teen Me and what I needed back then. I mean, I would have given anything to have a book like that. Where it was just presented as, you know, the characters in my book are, I do have queer characters in my book, and that's, you know, that's part of it, but it's not like the main plot point. It's just, you know, they accept who they are, and it's not like this huge dramatic coming out or anything like that. And I would have loved to have something like that.
Yeah. Where it's just a girl who's bi, and she just happens to be bi in the story, but it's a story like anybody else would have. Like, I get what you're saying. There wasn't much like that when I was a teen either, so I probably would have been really excited for Hot Dog Girl for sure.
Yeah. So, then it was, I timed everything. At this point, I was really working on like the Pitch Wars schedule. So my last like couple of books, I had timed to be done in that Pitch Wars window.
Okay.
So that I could submit it to that. Because I got it in my head like early in the process that like Pitch Wars was like the path for me.
Okay.
So I submitted it to Pitch Wars. Every single person that I submitted it to requested the full. Everybody was really excited. And then I was like totally sure that I was in. Like, I just like had it in the bag, I felt like. And I didn't end up getting in, but I got a really encouraging email back from a couple of the mentors, and they said, I think that this is ready to query. I don't think you need this.
Yeah, that's and like the best kind of rejection to get for Pitch Wars, I think.
Right? I was like, it was like a roller coaster, because I'm like, what? They do the announcement, and I'm like, what? Like, how is my name not on this list? I was like, you know, it was like an instant, like, heart on the floor kind of moment. And then I get these emails, and they're like, yeah, I think, and one of them was such a, like, a ray of hope, and was like, you're going to be agented before these even go live. And that was something that I held on to when I did start sending it out, because I was like, well, they said, so mm-hmm. they have to know, because sometimes, and it's amazing to me that, you know, like something so small, like a 3-sentence email that was like, I think you're ready, you're going to be agented before, like these tiny little things like that can mean so much to you.
Yeah.
So that's something that I try to do now, is especially like if I'm helping somebody out or whatever, I just want to like kind of pay that forward and be that positive force, because I know how much it meant to me.
Okay.
But then right after that came Pit Mad, which was the query pitch party, mm-hmm. that kind of goes along with that. And I got some interest in that. I had some agents request. Some like it, and then for the first time they start upgrading to fulls, which, remember, has never happened in the history of, at this point it's like 2016, so I was, you know, I'd been writing for 7 years and never had a full request.
Oh my gosh.
So I was just like,
yeah, how did you like encourage yourself to keep going?
It's just, I think just, it's just what I wanted, and I felt like I needed to work for it and I wanted to work for it. And so I just started, you know, in the first book, like my 120,000 word new adult novel, I really had like rose colored glasses. Like, this is going to be easy. Yeah. This is like a done deal. And then when that was across the board rejection, I just really just adjusted my thinking and was like, this is going to be a process and I have to just like take the wins where I find them. So even if it was like a personal rejection on, you know, a 10 page sample that didn't even lead to a request, I would take that as a win because the agent who's super busy took a minute to write back. Yeah. So I just started looking for tiny wins while, you know, obviously I'm still working a day job. I'm still doing all that. I also write comics, so that was an outlet for me too. Okay. But really it was just, you know, find the small wins. And also it's just the stories keep coming and I just feel like, what am I going to do with them? I have to write them. So it's really just like a passion. I don't think I could stop writing even if I still hadn't gotten to that point where I am right now. For 7 years, I just wrote, you know, every year without getting there. So I would imagine I would probably still be doing that.
Still be doing it. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Which, you know, sometimes it does take people longer than 7 years. That does happen. And mm-hmm. I think that it's a test also because it's like if you keep going, then you really, really do want this. And, you know, it's not guaranteed no matter how hard you work. There's so much luck involved in this industry, which mm-hmm. is so infuriating because it's like people who have book deals and agents doesn't mean they worked harder than people who don't. It just means that not only did they work hard, but they also happened to get lucky. And it's part of what you just can't calculate and you can't account for at all. So I am glad that you kept going, though. That's amazing because now people get to read this wonderful book that you wrote. So tell me what happened after you entered the pitch party for Pit Mad and all that good stuff.
So I'm getting my full requests now, mm-hmm. Which is thrilling. And I start getting, people start passing. And some people are outright, I had someone flat out say, you know, queer girls are a really tough sell. Which is really just like, you know, that hurts on so many levels because, that's saying, you know, I mean, because it's me, you know, you're saying nobody wants me. Nobody wants to hear a story about, you know, me having a good time and not having, you know, just a queer girl out there having a rom-com. Like, but yeah, so I started to get some stuff like that. And then I had an agent who I thought for sure was going to be an offer. This one really, just like I said, it doesn't take much to, you know, that these little glimmers of light can really keep a person going.
Right.
The opposite is also true. It's also really easy to like crush someone in this state. And so this agent, seemed really excited, was a full request and actually was emailing me as they were reading. So, which I hadn't had from any of the others. So I was like, wow, they're really invested. Like they're sending me little funny gifts and stuff and they're, you know, they're emailing me and like gushing or saying, this just made me laugh out loud. So I was like, again, this has got to be an offer. No other agent has done this. And then it wasn't an offer.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, she got to the end of the book and said she really enjoyed it and, you know, that she hoped to see it on the shelf someday and, like, all this really complimentary thanks for sharing. But that it was going to just be a tough sell.
Oh, gosh.
And I was like, okay. Yeah, honestly, that one really gutted me.
Yeah, absolutely. I was about to say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how devastated were you? Because that's...
Yeah, like a billion.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't... Like, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I totally ugly cried. Like,
course.
I just didn't... I'm like, but every chapter, like, right up to the end.
I know, that's so much... Like, you would think, like, if they're going to invest that much time, like, even me right now, like seeing all of the different, you know, things that people have gone through, if I had a friend come to me and tell me, like, the agent is updating me, like, as they read, I'd be like, oh, they're probably going to offer, like, at least to myself, I would say that, so.
Right. I have to say, like, I have not experienced that with any other agent. So it was strange. It was really strange.
Yeah.
I don't really know what happened there. Mm-hmm. But that was definitely extremely devastating. Mm-hmm. To the point where I was like I had said at the beginning, when I felt like I was putting this book out, I felt like for the first time, like this book could really, I was very vulnerable. So when that happened, I wanted to stop because that hurt like a lot on a personal level. These rejections hurt. I was absolutely right. Like I needed to get rid of that bubble, I think, to write well. But it definitely became so much more personal once I did.
Yeah.
And even though I had 7 years of getting used to rejection, this rejection was different.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine. And I think that a good rule of thumb for any of the authors that are listening right now who are querying, don't ever assume it's an offer until you get the offer. Because I had somebody on an earlier episode, I think it was Mark, who had an agent, like, meet with him and, like, take him out to lunch and then just completely disappear on him. So it's, yeah, I know. And it's, like, it's so tempting. And, like, I think 9 out of 10 times, like, when they do things that are so, like, show that they're so interested and invested in the story, it is going to be an offer. But there's always those, like, weird outliers that just, I don't know what they're thinking, really.
Right. I don't know.
It's just better to protect your heart and to just assume it's not, just even if it seems really obvious, only because it's easier to, like, be happily surprised than it is to be, like, crushed that way, you know?
Yeah.
I just couldn't imagine. Oh, my gosh. So you feel like giving up. So what happened?
Yeah.
What happened
next? So right after that was DV Pit. And that was, I think that was only a couple weeks after, maybe a month after.
Okay.
So I'm still raw. I hadn't queried the book at all. So this book had only been to the Pitch Wars people and then in PitMad. Like, I didn't traditionally query it.
Okay.
And after that happened, I just didn't. I just stopped. Everything stopped. DV Pit came, and a lot of my friends were like, you should, you know, based on what you were going through, you should enter, because people are telling you queer girls don't sell, and here's DV Pit. The agents that are going to like it are going to be going in. They're looking for diverse books. They believe in diverse books.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't know. You know, for one, I was still very emotional. I wasn't sure I was ready to really put myself back out there.
Right.
And then there's always that in the back of my head. I always have that, am I queer enough to count kind of a thing? Because like I said, you know, so I'm like, I don't know. I think I read the guidelines on the page like 100 times. And even though it really clearly says, like, you know, LGBTQ and like everything, like, you're welcome. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, oh, that's so hard. And it's so hard because, you know, for DV Pit, there are always those, like, writers who are not marginalized who try to, like, find a way in. But then it stinks because there's authors like you who, or, like, biracial authors or authors who are going through, who have, like, mental health issues who, you know, it's all for people like them, people like us. And they still don't feel enough because of their own insecurities with their own, like, identity. And that kills mm-hmm. me because it's like, no, don't let it stop you. This is the point. Like,
yeah. So I had definitely, so I woke up the morning of DV Pit and I was just like, I'm not going to do it. Mm. I'm not going to do it. I am not ready. Like, I can't go through another, like, close call like I just had. And there's just too much. And I'm just raw. So I'm like, I'm not going to do it. I'm driving to work. You know, I didn't prepare any pitches. And I'm driving to work. And I just keep thinking about it. And I just keep thinking about my friend who's like, these are people looking for these kind of stories.
Your friends are smart.
And I'm like, okay, so I have it on, I just have the radio on, and I'm like, I leave a lot of life choices up to what I call the radio gods, so oh, it's God. Like, so I'll be like, okay, whatever, like, if I'm trying to decide something, I'll just be like, whatever song is next is gonna, like, give me this clarity. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you know what? Fine. If the radio gods want me to do this, if the universe, like, thinks I should do this, then the next song is just going to be something that very obviously tells me to do this. And so then the song ends and I'm like just ready for some, like, random song, you know, because I'm like, I'm not doing it. You know, this was all just a show. Mm-hmm. And then it was actually a Nicki Minaj song that came on next. It was Moment for Life.
Oh, and my God.
I was like,
I love this story even more now because I'm obsessed with Nicki. So I love this.
Yeah. So but that's, like, kind of hard to ignore, right?
That's, like, a sign. It's a sign. It is a sign.
Yes. I'm like, this is a sign. I can't I have to do it. Like, Nicki Minaj and the radio gods have conspired at this moment. I have to do it. So I pulled into my parking lot and I was actually a couple minutes late for work because I just typed up something, like, super quick. And then I hit tweet and then I went into work. And then I didn't really know if anything would come of it, but it did. And so when I checked it a little bit later, I had gotten a lot of boosts from bloggers and authors that, like, I really admire, which I was completely, like, I was just blown away. And I started to get so many agent likes and people were really into it. So I fired off, you know, I was on break. I fired off another one. And that was really, really the turning point, was DV Pit.
That's amazing. So,
yeah. So I ended up very quickly getting everything upgraded to fulls. But I was, you know, kind of sketchy because of what I had gone through with Pit Mad. So I was like, okay, great. Yeah, they want a full. Like, it was getting harder to celebrate the wins because I felt a little bit bruised and battered by that point. And then very quickly, I had the first agent call. Well, they emailed me. It was just, like, a few days and they wanted to talk. And I'm like, you know, I'm not falling for this again.
Yeah.
So
I know your squirrely ways now, agents.
Yes. Like, I'm on to you guys. And so I gave them a couple of days. Like, I was even like, you know, I was just like, well, I can talk today at 3 or I could talk like tomorrow afternoon. And they were like, in seconds, they wrote back like today at 3.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, okay. So I texted my friend and I was like, yeah, I have to rush home from work because like, and they were like, they picked like the first of, you gave them like 6 times and they picked the one that makes you have to rush home from work. Like, this is good. And I was like, yeah, we'll see. But it was an offer and I was completely flabbergasted.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I think I made them like repeat it a few times and they were so nice too, because I ended up talking to a lot of agents and they opened the call with, I just want to tell you right off the bat that this is an offer.
Oh,
and I was
amazing.
Like, oh,
finally.
Yeah. So that, of course, when you get an offer, you have to notify everybody. So I notified everybody that had fulls, which were still a couple people from PitMad and then several people from DBPit. And so I gave 2 weeks, which there were some conferences going on and stuff. So I felt like it was actually the first offering agent who said 2 weeks. I know some people only give 1 week, but you know, there's conferences, tell everybody 2 weeks, you'll make your decision in 2 weeks, and that should get everybody time, which I thought was really great because I didn't know what I was doing at that point. All of my research stopped at getting an agent offer, so I had no idea what I was supposed to do after that moment happened. And I've since heard, like, horror stories of, you know, people being told, like, by the offering agent, like, no, you have to decide on the spot, or, you know, or just like saying, no, this is like exclusive or things like that. So I really appreciated that, that they gave me time.
Yes.
And, you know, to make the best decision. And as a result, I ended up with 7 offers of representation.
Oh my gosh.
Which,
amazing.
Yeah, so it was pretty much one for each year.
I was about
that
to say
I had
the same
writing.
Yes.
And
oh my gosh.
I was like, I couldn't believe it. It was a very difficult choice. And then I haven't really talked about this, but I ended up signing. So I ended up signing with Brooke Sherman, who is at Janklow and Nesbitt. Right before my decision, another agent that was on that small list of super dream agents called me, and they had been at a conference, and they had liked me from PitMad, and they offered, and it was like, at that point, I hadn't heard from you know what I mean? I thought if I hadn't heard from you, it was kind of a done deal. So I kind of was like, I'm going with Brooks. But then I heard from this other agent that I really loved also. And that made for like a very stressful decision, which is just like, you think like one thing that I really learned was like, I really thought, you know, you get an offer and like the idea of being in a situation with multiple agent offers, I thought that would be something that would be really fun.
It's not.
After trying for so hard to get there, I was like, this is great. And then I'm like, this is so hard.
Yeah.
Because you have to just, first of all, I'm a people pleaser, so it was really hard for me to say no to the people that I didn't go with. And second, you just have to have faith. You certainly have to do tons of research, but there is like this leap of faith when you're like, I think you are the right fit.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think a lot of people realize like just how difficult it is. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where you don't want to seem like you're complaining about having multiple offers because it's like so hard to get to that point in the first place. But it is really, it is really hard. It's not an easy thing at all. And Yeah, I think I got about the same amount of offers as you. And I was like, I couldn't sleep. I was crying. Same thing. Mm-hmm. I don't like saying no to people. I felt like I was a bad person. It was just, it was a lot.
Yeah, it was so, it was a lot for sure. But then I emailed Brooks, and at that point we had, you know, I felt like I had a really good feel, and we had talked at length. So that was really exciting. And I have to say that as stressful as it was to make that decision, like officially telling him, you know, I picked you, like that was such a, like such a high moment, that it was worth, like it was worth all of the stress. We revised, I think we did 3 rounds of revision. And then we went on sub last June. So almost exactly a year. Actually, I think today might even be like the 1 year anniversary of the auction.
Oh, wow.
So we're right around that date anyway.
Nicki Minaj song comes on like right now.
It did. It came on again on my drive to work on the day of my auction. It came on again, and I was like, oh my gosh, I swear, when the book comes out, I'm just gonna like play that all day.
Yeah, she's obviously, like, she's trying to tell you something for sure.
Yeah. So, and I wasn't even cheating. Like, it wasn't like I was listening to like a Nicki Minaj like album.
Right.
It was literally the radio. It wasn't even like Pandora on like Nicki Minaj Pandora. It was just straight up radio with commercials. Like, I don't even have like Sirius radio. So it was real.
So tell me about auction.
We went on sub, and the first, so we went on sub on a Tuesday, and then the next Tuesday I had my first editor call that was an offer. So it was a week. Brooks had known that it was going to acquisitions earlier in the week, but he wanted to clear acquisitions before he like stressed me out.
Yes.
With that, we set up a plan, which is something I definitely recommend. We set up a plan when he sent me on sub of like when I wanted to know. We decided like weekly check-ins, like how much information I wanted, because I can be like really obsessive about stuff. So I didn't want to like, I didn't want it to turn into something like that. So I kind of, we had just planned, we're going to check in once a week with just, you know, a basic update and go from there and just, you know, and that'll be that. So I didn't know at the end of that week, because it had only been a few days, I didn't know that we were going to acquisitions. And then he said, you know, she's already cleared acquisitions. She just wants to talk to you. You know, and she has some revision ideas and she wants to make sure that you're into them. So I had that call, and then, I went for a run and had barely gotten in my door when Brooks was calling me, and he was like, check your email. Like, where? And he had emailed me like 10 or 15 minutes before while I had gone off running to burn off some of my like nerves. Mm-hmm. And it was like, just not long at all after my call, she had emailed her offer and he had sent it to me. And then he had sat there for like 10 minutes. I told her it was going to be coming soon, but publishing soon is different from real time soon. So I thought, you know, by the end of the week or whatever, but he meant actual in real life soon. So then he set an auction, and we had another editor call, and then we went, we ended up going to auction. And then that was pretty much, we did a 2-round best bid auction. So how that works is somebody gives you, they email in the morning with their best, you know, with what they say is their best bid, and then the top two move on to a second round in the afternoon, and they have the ability to increase their bids that time if they would like. But you can pick anybody who attends.
Okay.
Which was something, like, you don't have to pick. Like, I was like, so if I'm going to an auction do I have to pick the high bidder? I wasn't sure how that worked, but you don't.
Okay.
So if you really connect with somebody or you believe in somebody and they came up, and they're slightly less or what have you, you know, because money isn't, it's obviously it is a factor, but it's not the only factor.
Right. You don't want to like sign with an editor who wants you to completely change the book if that's not what you want to do just because they're paying more.
Right. Yeah. So then we had the auction and, I went with Stephanie Pitts at Penguin, Putnam. And, and that's pretty much, then we just finished copy edits and we're just moving right along.
That's amazing. That is such a whirlwind story because it was like all these years of you really trying and then suddenly everything just happens all at once, it seems like. Which is a lot of what publishing is like in general, I feel like.
Yes.
There's a lot of like suffering for long periods of time and then things just happen so, so fast. That's really great. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about Hot Dog Girl, which I'm really excited because I actually have the book and I am going to read it. I was on deadline and I had all these books that I was like waiting to finish as my prize to myself. So if you can tell people what the book is about, that would be great.
Hot Dog Girl is the story of a girl named Eloise as she schemes to win the heart of her crush, save an amusement park, and make the summer before her senior year as epic as possible, all while dressed as a hot dog, which is her job at said amusement park. So needless to say, things don't really go as planned for her.
Amazing.
That
sounds so great. I really cannot wait to read this. Okay, so everyone who's on the show, I give them a choice. You either can share your most embarrassing publishing-related story or something that you wish you'd known before you started.
I think the fact that I queried a novel and comped James Joyce counts as my embarrassing story.
That's true. For sure.
So I guess what I wish I had known from the start, which I think would have made a big difference, is just the importance of finding good CPs who will be honest in the way that you need them to be honest.
So
that's what I feel has really elevated my writing to the next level. I try to find people who, like right now I have like a really solid core group. I have like four CPs that I would just be completely lost without, and I try to complement our strengths and weaknesses.
Okay.
So I'm good at voice and I'm terrible at pacing. So one of my CPs is just killer at pacing.
Perfect.
And sometimes needs help with voice. So together we like make one really like, we're like the Power Ranger Connect Voltron of writers. So
I love this.
So that would be my advice to everybody, is to just like find your people. And then just make sure, another thing that's trial and error is make sure that you're giving back what you're getting. Mm-hmm. Cause I've had some CPs that just, you know, that are just takers. Mm-hmm. And I've had, it's just find the relationship. And then when you find them, just do the work and be there for each other and support each other.
That's perfect. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us and everything that you went through to get to where you are. Can you tell people where they can follow you on social media?
So I am on Twitter at JL_Dugan, D-U-G-A-N. And you can also find my website, which is jldugan.com.
Okay, perfect. And I will definitely link Hot Dog Girl in the show notes. So everybody, make sure you add that on Goodreads. And make sure that you listen to some Nicki Minaj, because apparently she's pretty good luck. Or
yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I have 2 thumbs up.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Write or Die. Don't forget to add my book, Go Squad, on Goodreads, and follow me on Twitter at Clarabelle_Ortega. See you next time.